League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here at Lambeau Field as we are gearing up for not only a Sunday game versus the Los Angeles Chargers, but the Packers have two games in 5 days coming down the stretch here. So going to be a quick turnaround for them next week. But as Matt LaFleur said today, they're focusing on game one first, and then they will take it from there. Spoon, there's been a narrative this week that this game could turn into a shootout. Is that a fair narrative? And if so, is there any chance of the Packers hanging around in that?
Well, you know, the Detroit Lions rolled up 533 yards against the Chargers last week. Now, the Packers aren't the Detroit Lions. But, you know, I don't know how the Chargers defense, which one's going to show up. You know, they have a lot of talent on that unit, but sometimes they just don't show up. And they have a irony of all ironies. They have a head coach who is the architect of the defense that Joe Barry is running. You know, and so, yeah, it very well could be a shootout. I could see it being one of these games that goes back and forth.
So, Ryan, it's fair to say then that if the Packers offense was going to rack up a lot of points and a lot of yards, this would be the defense they would do it against? Is that kind of what it comes down to?
Yeah, they're 31st. The Chargers are in yards allowed per game. I like how my friend Marcus Eversalt put it when we were talking. I see this game either being a shootout or a blowout. Like, either way, the Chargers are going to get their points. So the question that in the test for Jordan Love this week is, can you perform in a game that's necessitating a shootout for you to go out there? And they got to score points every week, put up yards. But, like, this week they have to put up points and yards. You have to match and keep pace with Justin Herbert, because this is the first time that this young Packers secondary and Jair Alexander did practice Thursday, but his availability is very much unknown. It's the first time this young Packers secondary since the Rasul Douglas trade is going to be tested. All due respect to Brett Rypien and Kenny Pickett, they're not Justin Herbert. So the Chargers are probably putting up points. Jordan Love, the ball's in your court. Can you, in this offense, keep pace?
Kenny Pickett and Justin Herbert kind of, like, remind me of each other, too, though. That, like, I guess maybe Justin Herbert has more.
What, and they both have two hands and both have 2 feet?
Maybe it's just that they kind of look alike, they kind of act alike.
So you don't mean as cool.
And that's where it ends.
Right. Maybe it's the hair. Like, if you see them, you kind of. Anyways, point is, Justin Herbert absolutely has a howitzer for an arm. So let's jump into the Packers' offensive side of this, though. As we said, a defense that they could feasibly put points and yards up on. The last 2 weeks, and really the whole season, but especially the last 2 weeks, we've seen them move pretty efficiently between the 20s. It's when they get to the red zone where they're having trouble and they're settling for 3 instead of 7. Came back to bite them versus Pittsburgh for sure. Spoon, have you seen enough to think that they'll continue an upward trajectory this week? Or are these red zone issues actually, like, deep-seated issues?
I don't know. I don't know if they're deep-seated. The way their team plays, they seem to be more of like a big play offense. So they need to, you know, they're scoring with often with big plays during drives. and they get down to the goal line, they don't really have like a tight end who is money in the tight end. I mean, in the end zone. I think Musgrave could be that later. But right now, he's just gaining his feet and starting to play really well between the 20s. You know, Dobbs is a good red zone guy, but everybody else is really not. And so I don't know what they have to do to develop it. Maybe score outside the 20. You know, maybe throw 25-yard completions, because they seem to do that pretty well.
Let me ask a question, and either one of you, Ryan, Spoon, either one of you can jump in here and answer this. They're pretty far down the list in red zone efficiency. Matt LaFleur did say today, like, I wish you could throw some of those out, because it's like, you know, end of game, we're going to nail it out, or know what.
Yeah. Yeah. He was saying you sometimes you end the game like the Rams game. Well, I'm like, you've only won three games. So it's not like you've wound up. I'd like to see. I'm trying to think how the New Orleans game, they kicked a field goal to win it. Is that right? Or did they score a touchdown?
The Saints missed a field goal at the end.
Okay. And their other win was Chicago. I don't think they lost any red zone. Anyway, bottom line, no, I don't think that's a factor.
But they are tied for first in the league in goal-to-go situations. So that would be within the 10. So is it the 10 to 20 that's the problem, Ryan?
Well, I think Spoon hit it right on the head. I think the sooner that Luke Musgrave can become that red zone threat, which he is absolutely has fits the profile to do with the size, the way he moves, but really the size. He is a big guy, and you like having a big tight end in the red zone. Tucker Kraft, too, to a lesser extent. I mean, both those guys, profiles, guys that can be good red zone targets, but they're also rookies, and, you know, we've seen Luke Musgrave get better, but there's still a lot of progress for him and even more for Tucker Kraft. But I think long term, that's the quickest solution. Having those two tight ends become comfortable in that area of the field, everything else kind of stems off of that.
Matt LaFleur has mentioned a couple of times over the past week that to be efficient in the red zone, you have to be able to run the ball well in the red zone. I think it's easy to hear that and immediately think, oh, okay, that equates itself to rushing touchdowns, of which they only have four or five, I believe. I want to say it's
five.
Jones and Love have two. Dylan has one.
Yeah, two are the quarterback, like you said. I mean, that's three for running backs.
And so it's easy to hear that and think, okay, that equates itself to rushing touchdowns. But is that necessarily the case? Like, to run the ball well in the red zone, does that have to translate to rushing touchdowns? Or is it also about, you know, Ryan, you and I were talking about Patrick Mahomes on the Manning cast this week, mm-hmm. correctly predicting what the Broncos would do in the red zone. He said they're going to run it twice and then do a hard play action and score off the pass. And that's exactly what they did. Is that a little bit of it, too, that you've got to have that at least threat of being able to run it in the red zone to sort of do what you want to do?
Yeah, yeah, you do have to have that threat. I mean, look at the opposite side when the Packers are in goal line. So, you know, the opposition usually lines up with three wide receivers and forces the Packers to play their nickel defense, which they do, and then they run the ball right down their throats. The Packers go to two tight ends, and the other team goes to its base or goal line, and they can't run it in because they're not that kind of team. So they have to throw it. I do think if they could run it a little better, that would change their fortunes in the red zone a lot. If teams had to come up and bring a safety up because they were worried about A.J. Dillon or Aaron Jones. But if I'm the opposition, I'm not that worried about their run game right now. You know, I mean, I would be a little worried about Aaron Jones, but nothing really would scare me about them.
They don't have a road grading offensive line. They've got an offensive line that is built and in most aspects has done pretty well in pass protection, but they're just not the dig your toes in the ground and go downhill type. And it's kind of felt like it's been forever that way, Spoon. I mean, this is how they always were with Aaron Rodgers. It was a pass protecting offensive line, and the run blocking. The one thing I will say is that early in Aaron Jones' career, he had an immaculate nose for the end zone. I mean, he could just fit into tight spaces, and he ran a lot harder than his frame. So even without the road grading offensive line, I do think that giving Aaron Jones the ball inside the 5-yard line, good things are usually going to come from that. But yeah, that's part of it, and they don't have the beef, the girth that you really need to be a great run blocking offensive line.
Yeah, they don't have finishers. Like, Aaron Jones was a finisher mm-hmm. for a long time, but it's pretty obvious from this last game that he's beat up. He got sort of tripped up from behind on a play. It was like a short pass and run, and I thought he was gone. I thought that was a score, no question. But he ended up, kind of deciding to use the form because I don't think he was that confident he could run away from the guy. And that's kind of what they're lacking, is that type of player. Christian Watson should be that type of player. They should be able to throw him a slant down there and, he just breaks it in for a touchdown. I mean, think about how many plays we've seen where Packers corners get beat on a slant, mm-hmm. Because the guy who's coming off the line of scrimmage is fast and big and talented, and the Packers just aren't doing that right now. So right now I think they can move the ball, and I think they're going to have to continue to be somewhat of a big play offense and rely on that.
The thing I was kind of thinking with Aaron Jones after the opener was he's 28 years old. He turns 29 and a few weeks here, he's at that age where running backs break down. This is the end of the road at this age for most running backs. And he has that opener, and I'm like, man, maybe all the give the ball to Aaron Jones more week after week through the early parts of his career and the fact that they didn't, maybe that preserves him a little bit. Maybe that's why we're seeing this at this age. He's still explosive. He still has burst. He still has juice, all those things. And then since then, he's been banged up. Mm-hmm. And he's had two games that the last two games he's been as close to healthy as he's been from the opener, but he hasn't played like Aaron Jones. I'm very curious to see, is this the end of the road for Aaron Jones? Because it is for darn near every other running back once you get to this age. This is just the way the position works at this level. Or is he going to? Does he have something left? I think that's going to be very fascinating to see in the next month.
Yeah, I want to see him in Detroit on turf, mm-hmm. and that'll be a good barometer of, Pittsburgh turf is terrible. He's very much a turf type of runner. I mean, he's been great at Lambeau Field, but you can really tell when he can make a difference in those situations. Dallas
yeah. His career, was his first big game.
Yeah, so I am kind of curious to see how he does there.
I want to go back to the red zone thing real quick because I just want to wrap that up with a thought. You mentioned that there's not really like a road grading offensive line to help down there. Do you think we could see let's play a little wishing game. Let's say they use a jumbo package. Who do you want to see out there? Because I would trot like T.J. Slayton out there in a jumbo package.
Sean Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, you saw what he did against the Rams. Yeah. He would be my first choice if you decided to do that.
Yeah. Great last name.
Ryan.
It was there. I had to take it.
I was on a podcast yesterday, a guest on a podcast, and my friend Carmen, who used to cover the Bucks, was on there. And she said, when I covered the Bucks, they used to use a jumbo package where Vita Vea was a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine, could you imagine handing the ball off to, Quay Walker? Quay, that's when you can leap.
I thought you were going with the T.J. Slayton as a fullback. That would be something to see.
Put T.J. Slayton in as the jumbo package and then
you
hand the ball
off to Quay
Walker.
You guys don't remember William Refrigerator Perry, do you?
No, but that's an excellent name.
I remember LaTroy Guyon playing right guard in the 2016 NFC Championship game in Atlanta.
Yeah,
so,
I remember that.
I don't know. I mean, those offensive linemen, they might look the same, but they're a little different, the defensive linemen.
The fridge, for your information, was like 370 pounds on a good day.
Yeah.
And before breakfast. Mike Ditka, just to embarrass the Packers as much as he could, gave him the ball at the goal line. And he scored. I mean, he was really a effective as a blocker. In fact, there's a huge controversy in the Super Bowl because they gave the ball to Perry instead of Walter Payton down at the goal line. You know, it's like Walter Payton finally gets to a Super Bowl and Ditka doesn't give him the ball. You know, so anyway.
When Jordan Davis was still in college at Georgia, Georgia used to always put him in their jumbo package, and he would always check in as an eligible receiver because he was extra on the line. And so it was like a joke. One of these days, they're going to actually throw him the ball, and they did one time, and he scored a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And it was not even a rush. It was a throw.
Yeah, so, that happens.
You never know. Backing up a little bit, though, off of the red zone, y'all kind of already started touching on, you know, what they could do with some of those slants and things. But we're seeing Jaden Reed, Tay Wicks, some of these guys as well, really starting to find their footing over the past couple of weeks. And so is this one of those games? I mean, Spoon, as you said, this looks like a big play offense, that's what they're going to rely on. Is this one of those games where you're going to start looking maybe more and more to some of those guys like Wicks and Reed and Musgrave, who they like to kind of hit down that left seam some?
I would. I would try to take some pressure off of Watson. I would try to feed Watson a few times on some slants, get him kind of going in the early bit. But my money guys are Jaden Reed, Wicks, and Musgrave right now. Well, Dobbs is a money guy, but you also have to assume that other teams are going to try to take him out of the game. They're going to take either him or Watson out of the game. And more often than not now, they're going to lean towards Dobbs. But those three guys can make a huge difference, and they're playing really well. Now, you know, Musgrave has got two routes that he's kicking butt on.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, there are so many other things that's left out there for him to do. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever watch a Travis Kelce play, all the different routes he can run, the places he can sit down in zones. Right now, Musgrave's good going, splitting the safeties, and he's good running that corner route, you know, with a linebacker on him. So go ahead and keep exploiting that, you know, and maybe his game will start to improve. Reed's going to continue to get better. The only thing, you know, I've always been told is that little guys, when it gets cold at Lambeau, are not as effective. But, you know, Reed's a pretty well-built guy. So
was that the case with Cobb?
Yeah, kind of. Yep. You know,
even early in his career.
Yeah. Oh. I think that's why Green Bay has always stayed away from those guys, mm-hmm. because they always felt like they faded in the cold weather. And why smaller receivers would fade in the cold weather, I don't know.
Jaden Reed did play in Lansing, though.
That's what I'm saying. He's built pretty well. Mm-hmm. He has played in the cold. You know, he's been a outside receiver. So he's built, you know, my point was, let's see, I want to see that, you know, how well he performs. If he continues on the road he's at, you know, they got to keep making use of him.
When we're sitting here Sunday night after the game, Ryan, who's the leading receiver versus the Chargers?
It's a great question. I can almost tell you it's not going to be Christian Watson. And I think, Spoon, you're onto something there. What's the best way to get Christian Watson back on track? Take the dang pressure off him. You know, you've got all these other guys. Throw it to them. They're probably open. And once you start throwing it around to them, the defense is going to react because they react off film. The interception Jordan Love threw to Christian Watson in the end zone, the first one, the ball should have never gone there. That was the issue. It wasn't even a bad ball. It just shouldn't have ever gone there. He was blanketed. Throw it to who's open. So I think that's the question of do they finally start to take the pressure off Christian Watson? Jaden Reed is 9 games into his rookie season, a little bit past the midway point, and he's on pace for the best, if you just even look at his 16-game pace, he's on pace for the best rookie season by numbers of any rookie receiver the Packers have had since Brett Favre came to town in 1992. I mean, that's a lot of receivers on that list, but he is on that pace right now. And this, you look long term, the season's still about long term, that's a building block piece. They haven't had a slot receiver that can predominantly do his damage in the middle of the field since early in Randall Cobb's career. That's a decade ago. Late in Davante Adams' tenure, he would split time almost equally between slot and perimeter, but he was still he's number one receiver. He's still very much predominantly on the perimeter. That to have a guy like that, and I'll be curious too, what's the final eight games hold for him, but to have a guy like that finally in the middle of the field, you got to keep using him as much as you can. Those are the easy receptions. Those get a quick guy like that out in open space, let him make plays with it after the catch. That's a guy I would be thrown to a lot.
Let's flip to the other side. Someone that does get thrown to a lot is Keenan Allen. And now this secondary that's just kind of patched together, hodgepodge together, you know, everything but the kitchen sink is in there. They're going to have to face one of the best receivers in the NFL. A couple of different guys today, you know, as soon as Keenan Allen's name was thrown out there, immediately reacted, first ballot Hall of Famer. Keyshawn Nixon, Valentine, both were like, you know, that's a surefire Hall of Famer. Spoon, is that some gamesmanship, or is this one of those guys where you go, yep, they're right?
Well, he's coming off a 170-yard game against Detroit. No, he's the real deal. He's had some health issues, but he is a tough guard. You know, he's a big guy. He's a great route runner. Even if they slap Jair Alexander on him, I don't think that's going to necessarily stop him.
Yeah.
They're going to have to just play really good team defense, or they're going to have to just take him out of the game. You know, do what you can to take him out of the game, and your other guys better play really well.
Does what they've done this season against Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp, you know, guys number ones receivers, does that give you any confidence if you're the Packers about how you can defend Keenan Allen, or is
Zero.
This a different animal?
Zero.
Zero confidence.
Jimmy Garoppolo was throwing to Davante Adams. Brett Rippon was throwing to Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
You know, even at the end, you know, Kirk Cousins had a great game, but then, you know, at the end, Jaren Hall's playing. At the end of the Saints game, you know, Derek Carr was playing pretty well, and then Jameis Winston comes in. So they haven't really faced anybody for a whole game who's any good, and this will be the first time.
Something else about that, Rasul Douglas was on the field for those games. This is the first time they're going to be tested without Rasul Douglas. All due respect to Brett Rippon and Kenny Pickett, this is different. So to answer your question, Keenan Allen's not a Hall of Famer. He had five straight Pro Bowls, but he's never been a first or second team All-Pro. So that's going to hurt him for his case. But he is a really, really, really dang good receiver. I mean, he's really, really good. So this is the first time they're going to be tested since the Rasul Douglas trade.
Mm. And you're going to be tested with maybe Jair Alexander, maybe not. You know, like you said, he didn't practice on Wednesday. He did practice on Thursday. Neither of those practices were padded. So we haven't seen – and Fridays are usually not padded either. So he's probably not going to have a padded practice before Sunday. And then your choices are Carrington Valentine and Corey Ballantyne, who have not – been picked on as much as I thought they would be. But then again, to y'all's point, look at the quarterbacks they've been facing. If there is no Jair Alexander, how do you defend Keenan Allen? Are you playing dime? Are you pulling Nixon over to one side?
Playing cloud coverage with the safety every single time. And you're vulnerable against the run then, and you're vulnerable on the other side. But you know, Rasul Douglas had a lot of help on Davante Adams, too. Mm-hmm. And as well as he played, you know, he also knew he had a guy behind him. And that's what they're going to have to do is just – I mean, you can cloud – we saw the Baltimore Ravens put four guys on Davante Adams once, you know. I mean, literally
didn't
had four guys.
I
don't think so.
It was like a diamond coverage or something.
But it's, yeah, I mean, they just said, we're taking this guy out. Baltimore did. And I don't know if Joe Barry's willing to do that, but, you know, because Eckler's really dangerous. Mm-hmm. Eckler is a really good player. And, you know, they got some other guys who can hurt them. So, I don't know. I would have a safety over him every single down, and then their run defense is going to have to show up.
I'm glad you brought up Eckler. That was our next point. So good transition. Because if you're not trying to stop Keenan Allen, you've got to stop Austin Eckler, who is, you know, that's a really good 1-2 punch to keep your offense balanced. And so, Ryan, like, what's the key there? Do you have to have Quay Walker back this week if you have any hope of stopping Austin Eckler, or have you seen enough out of Isaiah McDuffie, Devondre Campbell, to kind of shut this down?
It's kind of hard to answer that as any other way than, yeah, you do, after watching the Steelers game. I mean, as much as we want to talk about scheme this week, there's no question Quay Walker not being on the field was a massive part of the Steelers rushing for 200 yards. I mean, it just was. So, yeah, his presence is important. I think that it's more important to have Jair Alexander this week and was more important to have Quay Walker last week. You can get away with it a little bit better not having Jair Alexander against Kenny Pickett than Justin Herbert. But, yeah, they need Quay Walker back.
Here's the question. Do they have the guts to take Devondre Campbell off the field and put McDuffie in there with Quay Walker?
Right.
I would. I mean, I watched it pretty closely, the Steelers game, and Devondre Campbell was a non-factor. You know, he should have had a pick six. Mm-hmm. But, man, he couldn't get off blocks at all. It was rough. And so maybe it was just a bad game, but I keep asking them, are they going to find packages for McDuffie? And I just wonder if they will.
Along those lines, Jonathan Owens again or Anthony Johnson Jr. more? Because
they're going to go with those two guys. They're going to go with those two guys.
I'd put them on the field.
Talking about Owens and Ford?
I'd put Anthony Johnson Jr. on the field. You got to get him some snaps. You got to see what he's got.
If you're doing that, that's exactly what you just said. You're doing it just to look to the future, which I get because I don't.
Well, but there's another aspect to it, which I agree with, is, you know, everybody's making this big deal about them playing nickel down in the goal line. Uh-huh. And I get that. You know, the Steelers had three wide receivers in that situation, and the Packers responded with nickel. But I'm like, well, why not go to base and use your personnel the way to your strengths? Put Anthony Johnson in there at safety and let him cover the slot receiver. He's pretty good, you know. He's known for being able to cover guys. That's what he did. And it just seems like they're too stubborn or you know, they could have done that with Innis Gaines. Innis Gaines is a slot receiver. And, you know, so put him in at safety instead of Rudy Ford or Owens. Play your base defense, and then Innis Gaines goes and covers the third wide receiver. It baffles me that they don't do stuff like that.
A lot of baffling going along around.
You know?
Is that just being more committed to what you've got on paper than your personnel?
I think it's just being scared. I think it's these two corners, I'm really worried about them, and I want to keep my safeties back, you know. And
get younger when you're already young.
Yeah, I mean, after Najee Harris ran through there untouched, you know, every time I got within the 5-yard line, a team got within the 5-yard line, I'd have my goal line defense in there. I don't care if they brought 5 wide receivers out, you know. You just can't let teams run right down their throat.
I just have this lasting image in my head of Jaylen Warren dragging Jonathan Owens to the end zone, and Jonathan Owens is in there to tackle. Like, that's the book on him when he came over from Houston. He is the tackling safety, which should help in run support. But if you're going to get dragged to the end zone, you shouldn't. There's no reason for him to be out there. If that's what he's going to give you, then put Anthony Johnson Jr. in and get creative with the matchups.
I think I know the player you're talking about. Someone's got to hit him first, though, right? Yeah. Before he gets to Jonathan Owens, someone's got to slow him down.
Sure, but you got to get him down.
There was another play though, and I'm trying to remember if it was Owens or not. Ford was in on there, but I'm trying to remember.
Are you talking about the Gerrard touchdown?
It wasn't a touchdown. It was a 20-yard gain on the second-to-last drive for Pittsburgh's offense. And it was right up the gut, and it was 20 yards for Warren, and he drugged two guys for about 10 of them.
Yeah, yes, Owens missed the tackle on that one. TJ Slayton got blown out of the middle.
Yeah.
Yes, I know exactly what play you're talking about. That was bad. Devondre Campbell couldn't get off a block. Rashawn Gary didn't really give it his all on that one. It was, I think that's the play Leroy and I looked at on X's and O's, if you want to take a look at it. Oh. It was embarrassing, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And then the touchdown, was it Najee Harris? Or, no, it was Warren, where Carrington Valentine does an arm tackle. Rudy Ford comes in, misses him completely. I forgot who the other guy was, but that was embarrassing. It's just a major hole right up the middle, or right off the right guard.
Call me right in the middle of stuff. I'm trying to think. Okay. I'll see where to cut that. We also spoke to Keyshawn Nixon today about just the juice he feels like he's getting now that it's getting colder and he's got a little bit more ability to bring a ball out. Is this where you can kind of start to see him impact games more and more? Because if you're an offense, especially if you're going to be in a shootout, it's a lot easier to work with a short field.
Yeah, he kind of showed that. What's his average now? 26.4 on kickoff returns, 10.9 on punt returns. Yeah, I mean, he's starting to feel it.
He, you know, it was weird because it wasn't even that cold in Pittsburgh. Now, no. I don't know about the wind. Was it windy?
Not really.
But it wasn't.
No, it wasn't windy.
Inclimatic by any stretch, yeah. Especially for Pittsburgh in November. And I don't know anything about the Steelers kicker, but the whole game, he wasn't getting into the end zone. And maybe he just can't get into the end zone. But if he could, and he was just flirting with the idea of Keyshawn Nixon returning kicks, that is a bad way to live. Because it's clear he's still dynamic. And if you give him ops, he's going to break some. Like, it's just the way it is. So, what's the weather supposed to be?
It's low 40s. It's like 43 so,
yeah,
kickoff.
That's more where the ball doesn't travel as far and whatnot. But in Pittsburgh, it just wasn't. And when he gets these opportunities, he's dynamic.
Yeah. He told us today on Thursday, he said, it doesn't matter how far the return is, though. If I don't score, it was a bad return. And that's kind of the talk he started talking last year before he broke that off versus the Vikings. Bisaccia has lauded Nixon before and said one of his best attributes as a returner is that he's completely fearless. So if that's kind of – if he's had a game or two like this under his belt – take the weather out of it. Does just having that confidence make a big difference for a returner? Like, could we see him start to – he's never been shy of bringing it out of the back of the end zone, but could we maybe even see him push a little bit farther, even if it is in the low 40s on Sunday?
I don't know. It'll depend on how they kick to him. You know, they might pop it up. They might put it in the corner. You know, his – Each time he touches the ball, there's an opportunity for him to go, and it depends on the blocking, and it depends on him. So I just think it's a threat they have. There's a very good chance that he'll get like 7 or 8 opportunities on Sunday. True. You know, it could be 10 opportunities. You never know.
Music to his
so
ears.
Maybe he'll be the 10 one who matches their scoring. You know, and it's a shootout between Keyshawn Nixon and Justin Herbert.
Do we think Nixon scores a touchdown on Sunday?
No.
I think he does. And you remember last year, I was the only one that called it.
Didn't it take you 3 times?
So?
For sure it took you 3 games.
Yeah.
I
can call something happening if I call it every week, all right?
Yeah. But I only called it like 2 or 3 times, and I still called it when y'all didn't.
All right. Let's make it a little harder. How about if you give us each $50 if he doesn't?
Yeah, there you go.
No, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're really pretty easy to do it when you.
She's Jair Alexander now.
Let me say this. I think he scores a touchdown within the next month.
Oh, well, I think Jordan Love's going to complete a pass within the next 2 years.
So see, you're saying it's a given.
I think Christian Watson scores a touchdown the next month.
The Nixon one might be a better bet right now.
Could be. I don't know.
I'm just trying to get bold here.
I know we've got coaches coming up, so we're going to go ahead and start landing this plane. two games next week. So next week's going to be a little bit of a weird turnaround with the podcast as well. So kind of stay tuned for how we're going to handle that. They'll play in, of course, Detroit on Thanksgiving Day. Ryan, do you put your Christmas tree up before you go to Detroit?
Gosh, no. No. Oh, this is very important. Thank you. I know we got to get down to talk to the coordinators, but can we have rules about this, please? Can we just all agree that Christmas season does not...
I'm going to let you say your piece and then tell you why you're wrong.
I am saying my piece. Christmas season does not start until after Thanksgiving. The day after Thanksgiving, that's fine. Now, I've come a long way. It used to be December 20th, not December 19th, not a day before. I have kids now. So, yeah, I like to celebrate the Christmas season, but it doesn't start until Black Friday. You have to have Thanksgiving first. This is the proper order of things.
Is that just for you, or do you get mad if other people put their Christmas stuff up before Thanksgiving?
I wouldn't say mad. I just inquisical, you know? Like what you doing? That's unnecessary.
You don't get to be a part of this discussion.
I don't, because he agrees. I have people in my neighborhood who put them up after Halloween.
Oh, goodness mercy.
I'm serious, and I'm just like...
Here's my thing. I personally like to wait till after Thanksgiving because I like to get a live tree, and it's not going to last.
Yeah. No, it's not.
Until Christmas if That's I put it up right. before Thanksgiving. But I might put some other stuff out, and if somebody wants to put Christmas stuff up before Thanksgiving, the world is a sucky, sucky place, especially nowadays. If Christmas decorations make you happy, put them up when you want to.
I would rather.
Does it really affect you if your neighbor puts Christmas decorations up early?
Absolutely it does. That light is that crappy blue light is shining onto my property.
I would rather postpone Christmas to like middle of February. Along that logic, the world's a sucky place because it's 60 degrees right now. Like I'm not bogged down by winter yet. It's just December 25th is not enough time to actually meaningfully lift my spirits. Middle of February, you got January and February after that. I could go for some Christmas cheer then.
Yeah,
when the months.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So, let's push it back, if anything, not forward.
I'll tell you what I am in favor of are those big blow-up Santas and reindeer for two reasons. One, my dog likes them. You know, he thinks it's the mailman, and he barks at them. But the other is that when they deflate, it's just hilarious, isn't it? Just
funny
to see the balloons. Oh, poor, like, oh, Santa.
So poor Santa.
Oh, reindeer. Yeah. I didn't think it was hunting season.
Okay, let me ask one more question that maybe you'll get a better answer. Do you have any sort of your own Thanksgiving plans? I know it's going to be tough next week because it's such a short week, but like.
Yeah, I've missed so many Thanksgiving.
Don't sound so excited.
Oh, I shouldn't hit the... First time in 10 years. When I was hired here in 2014, I think 2013, the Packers were in Detroit on Thanksgiving. So I'm like, well, there goes my Thanksgivings. It's been 10 years. I have not... This is my first time, so wow. I can't really complain.
So when I was covering college for so long, this is all Thanksgiving week is always rivalry week. And so 2011, I think, was the last time I had Thanksgiving with my family. And so, yeah.
That's
anyways,
a long time.
It has been a long time. I'm going to let us get down to coaches, and we will continue to have coverage for you leading up to Packers versus Chargers on PackersNews.com. Spoon will have his live blog starting 30 minutes before on Sunday as well. Stay tuned. Ryan will have inactives, which will be something very closely to watch as we kind of figure out what's going to happen with Jair Alexander and Quay Walker lead and Rudy Ford leading into Sunday's game. We will see you then. Until then, this has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.